From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the sixth day of June 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Agricultural Scott Irwin from the U of I will be here to take up the RFS, US EPA, corn-based ethanol, and more importantly, the future for advanced biofuels, including soy diesel. And then as we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too. That with Mark Russo from Risk Pulse out of Chicago on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. Nearby corn futures in the July up 9 cents at $4.27 1/4. September at $4.29. 9 1/4 higher. December at $4.30, up 10 1/4. And the March corn at $4.35 3/4, 9 3/4 higher. May futures at $4.38 3/4. That's up 9.5 cents in the corn. Soy complex now. July beans at $11.38 1/4, up 6 1/4. August contract at $11.33 1/2, 11 1/2. Higher. September at 11.18, 16 3/4 higher. November beans up 20.5 cents at $11.05 1/4. In January at $11.03 1/4, up 19 1/4. Bean oil for the day at $32.51, up 21 cents. Bean meal down $2.60 at $411.70 to July. August, however, up at $401.10. That's $3.40 higher. Soft red winter wheat up 10 1/4 cents at $5.07 1/2 in the July. September at 5.17 3/4, 11 higher in July. Hard red at $4.81 1/4, up 7 1/4 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $120.42 1/2 in the June, $1.57 1/2 lower. August down $1.70 at $116.10. Feeder cattle in the August at $144.52 1/2 per 100 pounds, down $2.15. September at $142.52 1/2, $2.65 lower. And the lean hogs June contract a nickel higher at $82.35, July at $86.85, up 87.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Be sure to tune in tomorrow. I'll come to you from the Corn Utilization Technology Conference in St. Louis. Should be a good way to get an update on what's coming down the pike for technology as it relates to corn and corn uses. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Kurt Kimmel is now here from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at a very busy day in Chicago. Hey, thanks for being here for the beginning of the week.
Well, you're quite welcome, Todd.
What was it that drove the marketplace this morning?
Well, several factors. Most prominent buyers were, of course, the commodity funds. Going to midday, they were buyers of 10,000 wheat contracts, 9,000 corn, 4,000 beans, 1,000 oil, and about 9,000 meal. They continue to pile on the long position in through here. Technically, the technicians were quite excited about the corn gap higher, the December corn gap higher, and left a 1 cent gap between Friday's high and this morning's low, indicating that we've got some bullishness in the marketplace. Also, we saw quite a bit of enthusiasm in the wheat sector also, and the beans kind of held in there but not quite keep the gains that they had earlier this morning, and that was due to some unwinding of the bull spread, the July-November spread particularly, as the bean market becomes kind of an old bull market. But the enthusiasm, basically fundamentally, talking 90, mid-90s to upper 90s as we go into the weekend, a little cooler than warming back up again. So the weather bull kind of took charge here today as the traders are trying to get an edge on future weather as we move through the growing season, Todd.
Any support coming from the outside parts of the world? For instance, are the exports still good for both corn and soybeans?
We saw the weekly export inspections report come in higher than expected on corn at the upper end at 42 million bushels. Bean shipments were kind of at the lower end, around 3.6 million bushels, and wheat kind of in there at 14.3. We did see a new bean sale to unknown destination for 125,000 tons of beans to unknown destination. But ideas are that as we move along and through here, sales will continue to be relatively good. We need to see some new corn sales continue to add up and through here, because the expectations are the southern hemisphere is going to be short on production, and the U.S. could take or be able to fill in some of that demand. Friday's USD WASDE numbers expected to will actually be watched real close on the world supply demand balance sheet to see the shift in the southern hemisphere. There's still an ongoing story out of the southern hemisphere. A lot of news indicated that there's a shortage of production and some good demand out of the southern hemisphere. So we'll see if the numbers are adjusted to reflect those thoughts here as we go into Friday's numbers.
Do we have any good experience with this as it's related to a South American crop that might be short, and how quickly USDA can manage to put those into the global marketplace?
Well, that's a good question. I think it's going to be an ongoing event over time. It kind of feels like the numbers will be slow to shifting through here. I think the main thing that everybody will wait for to see if we actually see that demand, you know, start to materialize. As far as the numbers goes, there's ideas that the crop was not even there to start with on their old crop, and this new crop production will be smaller. How much smaller, we'll see. But that's going to be the thing here. As we U.S. numbers will probably be unchanged, but the world numbers will be the market maker here on Friday.
Later this afternoon at 3 o'clock Central Time, so not very far away, the United States Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service will update the weekly crop progress report. Should continue to show things in good condition, I would think.
Yeah, as far as the corn crop goes, we know expected to be in that 70 to 75% good to excellent versus last week, about 72, about as expected. Wheat conditions are expected to be good, 62 to 63%. Wheat harvest, about 3 to 4%. Yields remain relatively strong. We will see our first soybean crop conditions report, 70 to 73%. Good to excellent expected compared to last year, 74%. So actually, this warm, dry weather here over the short term should continue to spur good conditions. The question is, will we start to see some deterioration down the road? Probably more importantly, we'll continue to monitor the breakdowns of what's going in different sectors of the map of the U.S., because basically we're still seeing the southern part of Illinois having an awful hard time getting their crop in. And they don't have the best conditions in some areas due to continued excess moisture conditions.
Hey, thanks so much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. In the middle of the last decade, the United States Congress, along with the Bush administration, decided it was important that the nation be more energy independent and that it looked to greener fuels, biofuels made from corn, ethanol, and more advanced biofuels, things like soy diesel. In 2015, the first ramp up of this biofuel's use was completed, or supposed to be, where 15 billion gallons of ethanol, mostly made from corn, would be used in the nation's fuel supply. However, only 10% of the nation's fuel supply can contain ethanol, and that's not quite 15 billion gallons. Though we're approaching that, I think for 2017, the number is 14.8 billion gallon, as recently laid out by U.S. EPA. And now the next step in this process really begins to take shape. Here to talk about biofuels, ethanol, and soy diesel is Scott Irwin, agricultural economist. He and Daryl Good have done some work over a long period of time looking at biofuels. Scott, thanks so much for being here. Why don't you lay out what U.S. EPA has done and where we now stand?
Well, there's some big changes from what we had been projecting as recently as a year ago. And the big change is due to Americans driving more and using more gasoline. And this is going to have a major impact on the implementation of the RFS.
How?
It has to do with the crucial issue of how much do the standards force ethanol use to go above the E10 blend wall. So the E10 blend wall is 10% of total gasoline use, and the standards in the RFS for ethanol mandate are a fixed volume. So the higher gasoline use goes, the easier it is to meet those standards with our conventional E10 gasoline blends.
Is there a projection that says, yes, we'll get to the 15 billion gallons, which is the top end of
That's
the
right,
RFS?
For the ethanol mandate. Even though in the preliminary rulemaking for 2017, they set the volume mandate at 14.8 billion gallons, we think that once they factor in the higher projections of gasoline use that are coming in now, that they'll be able to bump that up in the final rulemaking when it comes out in November to 15 billion gallons. So we think we're going to get to the statutory level by the November final rulemaking.
And this is actually pretty easy math, although over time it's been a little difficult to explain the difference between the blend wall and the volumetric side of it, which is the actual mandate. The mandate now is at 15 billion gallons. The blend wall has been lower than that, mostly because we didn't drive nearly that many miles and the CAFE standards got better and our cars got better mileage. So we were at around 132
right.
billion gallons of gasoline we were using in the U.S.
Right. It was a combination of the really high gasoline prices and also going through the Great Recession. We saw a major dip in total gasoline use as we drove less. And with the big drop in crude oil prices and parallel drop in gasoline prices, we've seen a nice rebound in driving and gasoline use, so that we're projecting gasoline use right now to be in the low 140s, around 142 billion gallons for 16 and 17. And that gives you a lot more E10 ethanol gallons to meet that mandate.
Yeah, and the math for the blend wall is simply 10% times the number of gallons used. And still, that comes up below the 15 billion gallons. However, you have to encounter a couple of other things, like E85 that bumps up the numbers.
Right. So the data that we have are not exact in terms of what is E10 consumption and what's E15 and E85. But the data would suggest that we're probably not consuming more than a few hundred million gallons in the form of higher blends right now. So the vast majority is still E10.
So all good for ethanol at E10 then?
Yes, yes. And it's very consistent. The data we're seeing on the increases in miles driven and gasoline consumption basically are showing up in a very consistent fashion in growing ethanol production and use. In the first quarter of 2016, our projections of total domestic disappearance of ethanol were up over 3%. And that's just simply people driving more and using more gasoline.
Yeah, the only big problems would be if crude oil were to go up sharply in price and or consequently for some other reason, the number of miles driven might go down sharply.
Right. If we had another big recession, that could happen. And if we saw, you know, we have seen percentage-wise a pretty considerable bump up in gasoline prices since the lows in January. We don't know what impact that's going to have, but so far it has not seemed to dampen Americans' enthusiasm much for driving.
So farmers who grow corn finally getting their due in full, I guess, out of the RFS as it was put in place. And we can put that one aside at the moment. Most of those farmers also happen to grow soybeans, but they haven't concentrated very much on what this really means to their soybean ledger. However, it's in the books.
Absolutely. And the way I like to think about it, you know, everyone has kind of thought in headlines of the RFS battles politically have been around the E10 blend wall and breaching it. I think that that issue is receding into the rearview mirror. And what's looming in the windshield is some real ramping up of the advance mandate. And how are we going to meet the total advance mandate that's on the books?
And how do we do it? And what is EPA said about it?
So far, the EPA has clearly signaled that they're fully on board with expanding advanced biofuels because of their superior greenhouse gas characteristics. They've reduced greenhouse gases more than E10 gasoline blends. So they've been on board, and we've seen some nice increases in both the biodiesel and the total advance mandate in recent years. But just the way the mandates are structured, we're scheduled now starting in really 2017, 18, 19 to see some sharp increases in this advanced part of the overall mandates.
Sharp means what for the farmer? Anything?
Yes, because it's both the composition of future increases in biofuels demand, because the increases in the advance could be in theory met by higher ethanol blends, but sourced from ethanol from Brazil instead of the United States. That's at least a logical possibility. Or it could be sourced from biodiesel and renewable diesel that is produced here in the U.S. or elsewhere around the world, and we import it. So those are the two possibilities. So far, the market has voted that the least expensive alternative is biodiesel. Like the term we like to use is biodiesel has clearly in recent years been the marginal gallon for making the RFS work. And so far, we don't see anything on the horizon that says that's going to change dramatically.
Meaning that the price there can be higher because it's the marginal gallon than otherwise you might expect?
Well, no, that it's the when you compare, for example, in the advance mandate, if I'm an obligated party, a refiner, I can meet that advance mandate by somehow forcing in higher ethanol blends like E85 and import the sugarcane ethanol from Brazil to meet that. Or I can use biodiesel that's either produced in the U.S. or imported. Which one's the cheaper way for me to meet that advance mandate? That's what we mean by the marginal gallon. And biodiesel has been cheaper in recent years, and we don't see that changing.
Hasn't USDA voted for E85 in the way it's published grants, though?
Yes. They're clearly trying to incentivize expansion of E85 and E15 through their blender pump program. And that may have some impact, but so far we haven't seen a real rush to expansion of E85, and even that program has a limited ability to push out further blender pumps that are needed. We think that you could see E85, E15 consumption go from a few hundred million gallons, maybe to 500, 600, 700 in the next several years. And that would meet a part of this advanced pool. But we still think that the heavy lifting is going to have to be done by biodiesel.
And it's about the infrastructure in that case where you have to have the blender pumps, you have to put them in. It takes some time to do that. It needs to be incentivized. And on biodiesel, it's just biodiesel and runs through the infrastructure that's already put in place.
Yes. Now, there's some debate about that question when you get to the some higher levels of biodiesel blends. It's pretty clear that everything in our fleet can use B5, which is 5% biodiesel. there's some question in cold climates and warranties for older diesel engines when you go above B5. So there's certainly those issues may become more apparent as we move forward. But right now, they're not very serious, I don't believe, for biodiesel in the next year or two.
Anything we missed, or how do we bottom line it all? One of the two.
Well, the figure I like to use is that these biodiesel statistics can kind of sneak up on people and the market. And the way I tried to summarize it in the article that Daryl and I wrote was that by 2022, if the EPA continues to implement the RFS the way it has been, and we see these big increases in advanced and it's met by biodiesel, it's possible by 2022 that we will need the soybean oil off of 50 million acres of soybeans from someplace in the world.
That's Scott Irwin, agricultural economist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can hear the whole of our conversation online at WILLAG.org. I'll get it posted up in the next, I think, 24 hours or so. I'm pretty busy traveling to St. Louis to the Corn Utilization Technology Conference this afternoon and into this evening. We'll come to you from there tomorrow for the closing market report and bring you a second day's worth of reports from there as well on Wednesday. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.